Hey, welcome again to Your Money and Your Mindset. My name is Laura Waitan and I am your host. And once again, we are here to talk about what goes on between your ears makes a big difference to how your bank account looks, how your relationships are, and how much help you have. So I'd like to welcome everybody. Welcome Stickum, Blog TV, Real Coaching, Radio TV Network, Receiver, Internet Radio, Radio Roku, New Media Radio, and our partner Stitcher. You're watching this on your smartphone. Good on you. Okay, we're getting into the last week thereabouts of January and everything is go, 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 go. However, in the midst of all that business where I think we can get so busy with stuff, we need to center ourselves, get a sense of who we are in order to achieve our goals and accomplish what we want to do. And I believe that we can have it all, okay? You can have the money, you can have the happy relationships, you can have the good health. But most of all, you can have that sense of knowing that you're doing what you want to do and what you're supposed to do in your life. And to get to that point, it's a case of getting to know yourself first and foremost, and loving yourself and accepting yourself. And that's what we're going to talk about today, because that's when we meet the best version of ourselves, right? If you think you haven't got time to go sit under the tree and contemplate your navel and say, you know, what is the meaning of life? What am I supposed to do on this earth? Well, I'm going to bring on this guest who basically found out for herself. And she kind of found out this insight in quite a hard way. It's a heartwarming story. But I'd like to bring on my guest, who is Dina Proctor today, who's written this amazing book called Madly Chasing Peace, How I Went From Hell to Happy in 9 minutes a Day. There you go, instant success. Now, I'm just going to give you a very brief bio about Dan, because I think, you know, coming from her, it's so genuine, and you will be nothing but inspired, and you will be leaving this show with what you need to get yourself in the right headspace and the heart space to do what you're supposed to do in life. So she is also the author of this book, but also a coach and a speaker. And she speaks from personal experience, having to struggle with food addiction, depression, and the like, to finding out her 9 minutes to happiness. So welcome, Dina Proctor. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here. I'm doing great. Doing great.
Ooh, yeah, we are excited. Now, look, this book called Madly Chasing Peace, it's kind of like a contradiction in terms, you know. How do you run after peace? It's like a road runner kind of thing. But the thing is that you started from a place that was as far away as possible from this, you know. But before that, we want to know who you are, really.
Yeah, well, I can share with you just in a nutshell, and I'm happy to go into my story if you feel that would be helpful for listeners. But today, just for the last couple of years, I'm an author. My book came out just a couple weeks ago, and it already hit bestseller, which is amazing. Yay! I've been getting great feedback, I know, around the world. It's exciting. It's really great. And nowadays, for the last over a year or so, I've been what I call a mind-body connection coach. I help people connect the dots to be able to, get the physical experiences that they want in their life by changing their mindset and getting in touch with that inner power source and that inner intuitive, component that we all have access to, but a lot of people don't know how to quiet the mind chatter and get in tune with that, and get off track and are just surviving but not thriving, I've noticed. So that's what I do in my coaching practice and then my writing. And, I've been taking my message to speaking to groups too, which is really fun. It's so amazing to connect with a group of people who, you don't know you don't know their stories, but to share from your heart and see them light up and get excited and get ideas and get inspired is amazing. I mean, there's nothing more fulfilling than being able to share my truth and my experience and seeing other people get uplifted from that.
Oh, fantastic, because I think right now a lot of people need a bit of a shot in the arm, because even though the GFC was in 2008, and let's face it, when most people will say money stress is one of the biggest stresses they have in their lives, being unable to meet their bills, or as in the case of people losing their jobs. So you're basically coming along and saying that, okay, especially in this time when you are stressed and you've got all these external pressures, this is the time to learn how to turn inwards to get that sense of stillness and peace. And from what I gather, from what you're saying, it's also that inner sense of conviction and strength to go out and do stuff that you would otherwise be too frightened to do, yeah?
Yeah, that's true. And I think I had what people call, it sounds weird, but they call it the gift of desperation. And the reason that desperation is a gift is because you're pinched to the point where you have no other option. You know, you either withdraw from the world altogether, or you get to the point where you figure out how to manage your internal life. You know, when I hit rock bottom in my life, I was drinking around the clock. There were 2 years that I had constant alcohol in my bloodstream. You know, like I was just so dependent on that substance. I couldn't get out of bed without that. I was in a horrible depression. I was wishing I wouldn't wake up in the morning, and I actually planned a date to take my own life because I had tried everything over the years. You know, there were over 10 years that I was in a state of depression. And I tried medications and therapies and group therapies. And, you know, I changed boyfriends, I changed apartments, I moved cities, I changed jobs. You know, like there's nothing I didn't change in trying to fix myself. And the whole time, that's why I called my book Madly Chasing Peace, because I just felt like if I could find peace, if someone could just give me peace, I wouldn't have to worry about any of this. And, you know, the whole thing I was trying to do is manipulate my circumstances, because I thought if I just find that perfect job, if I just find that perfect guy, or I just make that perfect income, everything else will fall into place. And it's not until you fall into place internally that your outside circumstances can come to mirror that. So, you know, I don't think anybody has to hit rock bottom before you start climbing up. That's not been my experience with clients. But for me, it ended up being a true, you know, looking back in hindsight, it was horrible to going through it, but it was a gift to have that desperation, because I was pinched to the point where I was completely open to any and all ideas. And that's where I was able to kind of give birth to the process that I use now to keep myself centered, and, you know, how I coach my clients and stuff.
Okay. Before we get into the mechanics of it, and, you know, you'll explain that to us. I just to share your story, this is not sensationalizing it, but I think a lot of people can relate to what you're saying, especially when you talk about, I've had a brief look at the first chapter of your book, and basically your upbringing was one where a lot of opinions about yourself were formed based on your interpretation of events as a kid, yeah? And a lot of people will probably have that in their background without realizing how much of an influence it is on the way they behave today, the way they think, the way, you know, the way they make money or don't make money, or are happy or not happy. So can you just share a bit more with us, please?
Oh, yeah, sure, of course. I think it's, I took psychology classes when I was in college, and I remember the professor telling us that most people make like two decisions when they're very young in formative years, you know, from when they're as early as 3-4 years old until they're 10, 12 years old. And a couple circumstances or situations happen. And in that moment, we make a decision about how the world works or about what we think about life. And we live our lives from that point forward with that, you know, focus of mindset. So one of them for me, I remember when I was pretty young, I was in the car driving with my mom, and my little sisters were in the back. And my mom was not a person who cried, you know, and she was crying as she was driving. And I was sitting in the front seat, and I was the oldest child. And she just burst into tears and had to pull the car over to regain her composure. And I remember just asking her, you know, I was shocked because my mom was a superhero to me. My mom was not a person who cried. And I remember looking over at her and saying, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And she was just repeating over and over to herself, like, "I don't know what to do. Just tell me what to do. Show me what to do. I don't know what to do." And she was talking to herself, or maybe to God, I don't know. But I thought she was asking me for the answer because I was the oldest and I was the one sitting next to her. So, and it pained me so much to see her in that amount, you know, that she was struggling so badly. And, you know, she regained her composure within 5 minutes, but I had already made the decision that, one, I would never do anything to upset my mother ever, And two, I decided that I needed to have all the answers for anybody who ever has a question in their life, you know? So I just I morphed into Super Kid, and I decided that I was going to take care of myself. I was going to have the answers for everybody, and I was going to be this perfect human being. So it's just an example of some, you know, a way that you can trace back a certain way that you've acted or behaved, or a mindset that you've had that can be traced back to, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago when you make that decision. And, you know, most times those paradigms, we don't question them. They're just become part of the fabric of our character. And we can live for years and not even realize the correlation there, and that we made that decision as a child and it might not necessarily serve us anymore.
Wow, that's pretty heavy duty stuff for a kid to take on and then assume that responsibility, that mantle of responsibility, and then feel that you had to live up to perfection, which included being a straight A student at school.
Yeah, because I liked when people were happy, and I liked being the source of that happiness. So I was like total people pleaser all the way. I was all about the straight A grades. I was all about you know, being as helpful as I could and pleasing as many people as I could, especially adults that could pat me on the back. I loved hearing what a good kid I was. I loved hearing, you know, what good grades I got, how smart I was. Loved that. I lived for that.
Okay. And then that is okay to a certain point, I suppose, because it helps with our self-esteem. But that turned into a double-edged sword for you, because you went off to do things like nonprofit for a long time, almost as though you're sacrificing yourself and putting your own needs on hold. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what it turned out to be for me. I realized when I went away to college, when I was no longer around just my family and my old habits, you know, I mixed up my environment for the first time. And when I went away to college, I realized that my way of doing things was not as normal as most people. You know, I needed to have things a certain way before I went to sleep at night. You know, very perfectionist. But I also had this, I guess you could say, addictive behavior quality. You know, like if I wanted to do something, I had to be full out. Someone once told me that my motto was, if it's good, back the truck up. You know, because if it's good, I don't want a little bit. I want a whole lot of it. So if I would eat, you know, birthday cake at a party, I would have a sugar craving and then have to, you know, satisfy that later and go binge out on sugar or food. Or if I would watch a movie with one of my roommates, we would enjoy the movie and my roommate would go off to bed, but I would have to keep watching. You know, like, you just had whatever was filling me up at the time, I had to have more and more and more. And I had this like empty hole inside of myself because I didn't have any self-esteem. I was living for pleasing people. I didn't have my own sense of power, my own sense of self-worth. And that's where my difference, you know, lied between other people. And I didn't realize that that was the problem at the time, but that was what was driving. It's like I kind of picture it how each one of us has a power cord that we plug into our internal power source, whether you call it the spirit of the universe or God source or universal energy. It's like that's where our power comes from. And it's like when you travel and you take your hair dryer to a foreign country and it won't plug into the outlet. That's what I was doing, because the outlet can only plug into, it's only made to plug into that universal God source energy. But I was plugging it into men and food and booze and, you know, like I was plugging it into all these things that wouldn't work. And therefore it wasn't, you know, they didn't fix me because it wasn't the power that I needed. It was always just kind of a quick fix or a self-soothing, you know, type of thing. So it got to the point where I thought that if I could fix enough people, I could fill up myself. And that's why I got obsessed with volunteering and going to, you know, other countries in South America and Africa. And, you know, when I was doing a full-time nonprofit, I was volunteering with, you know, six other organizations while I was working full-time at a shelter, because I just felt like it wasn't as satisfying as I thought it would be. And the reason wasn't because I wasn't doing the work, that I wasn't helping people. The reason was because I wasn't giving from a place of abundance and connection. I was giving in order to fill myself up. So it was kind of backwards. It's funny because now in my life, when I coach people, that's what I'm doing. I'm giving from my place of connection, and there's nothing more fulfilling than that. So like I was kind of on the right track with it, but going about it the wrong way, and I was in complete disconnection and, you know, in and out of depression. So it didn't work. But now being of service to others is immensely fulfilling to me.
Okay, you know,
does that make sense?
Yeah, well, yeah, it does. And the way you speak about it so candidly, thank you very much, because I think a lot of people need to hear this, especially people who are told, you know, chin up, you live, or something like, why are you feeling down? You live in one of the richest countries in the world, you know, what do you have to be sad about? When actually it's an internal sense of looking. Is it basically you're saying, I was looking for myself?
Yeah, you could say that. And what I would call it now is, you know, the best of me, my best self. It's not just my ego, personality, identity type of thing, or even just my career passion, which I have now and I'd never had before. That's not it. It's connection to that highest self. Like I say, my motto every day is that my goal or my mission statement is to be the fullest expression of my innermost self in my physical form. You know, because I believe that we are an eternal energy being, you know, so when we die in the physical life, it's almost like we just kind of withdraw consciousness from the body and continue to live on. So I believe that as much as we can remember that and remember that we are part of the energy source that's animating and directing our lives here and letting that source flow through us and direct the show as much as possible, it makes life more effortless, and we start to understand the importance of our intuition, our intuitive feelings, or those inspired ideas that seem to come from nowhere and might be kind of crazy. Maybe there's something to them, you know? I don't mean to sound all woo-woo, because it's actually a very grounded, centered space, you know, that I live in. But for me, it's extremely real that it's an energy, a universal energy source animating my physical body.
Yes, I agree with you there, and I believe that, you know, our best ideas come from, I guess, a special connection with source, God, whatever you want to call it that. And also, because the show is Your Money and Your Mindset, a lot of people here will be looking at means of basically generating more income, bringing in, you know, another revenue stream, or thinking of the next bright idea and so forth. And really what you have said is don't look outside as much as, or rather don't ignore your internal wisdom. So this is what we want to come and talk to you about, which is the way you did it. Now, understanding that we all live, inverted commas, busy lives, okay? So at this point in time, actually, hang on a second, we've just got a comment in the chat room. Do you mind answering this question? It can be...
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. So basically, you, growing up, you were basically the smart kid, got the straight A's. And so the question is, you know, did you have a sense of how you felt if somebody turned around and said the opposite and said you weren't that smart after all? Did you find that it sort of stung at your self-esteem?
Oh, yeah. It would crush me. It would crush me, you know, even if on some kind of offhanded thing, like if I got a B on a grade instead of an A.
Oh,
and, you know, I know. Oh, what a failure. But, you know, like that would even, and even more so if just the tiniest non-perfect thing happened, it would crush me if someone else would acknowledge that, a member of my family or a teacher that I trusted or a good friend in school, like, come on, you know, you're an A. What's this? You're kind of slipping or something, you know, that killed me. It absolutely did. So I lived for the validation, and that's what I was looking for, to validate, you know, like that's why I did all the nonprofit stuff and everything. And my, you know, my heart, I wasn't on the wrong track, but I was just kind of using it for the wrong reason. If you get what I mean, it was like, I just thought if I can please enough people and help enough people, that will fill me up. But I realize now that until I find my own power source, I don't really have something to give to another person anyway, to be able to uplift them in a meaningful way. Like, yes, I can bring them food or, you know, give them shelter or clothes or anything, but the long term is the relationship, you know, the long term, the thing that's going to last past just a meal is giving someone hope or being able to uplift them. And I could never have given that before. And that's what I can give now.
Mm. Yeah. Thanks for answering that question. So let's go back to what we're talking about. And basically, you know, because we live such busy lives, you look at people around you in any city, they're walking with their heads down, you know, looking at their iPhone, or they've got pods in their ears and are doing their thing, is that there is no time, or they feel there's no time to just be still and be quiet, okay? And you have worked it out how you can do this at a maximum of 3 minutes at a sitting, right? Only 3 minutes. Come on, folks, you people out there in, you know, blog TV and Stick'em Land, 3 minutes. I'm sure your attention span is that long that you can actually do that. So I want you to talk us through this process and how you actually came to work it out that, hey, this thing works for me and now it works for my clients.
Yeah, okay. Well, I call it 3x3 meditation. So it's 3 minutes, three times a day. And I did not invent it on purpose. I never intended to create this. I never intended to be a meditator, or, you know, I didn't even know what that meant. But what happened after I had hit rock bottom emotionally is I entered an addiction recovery program, and I was in that program for a year. And I chose a woman to mentor me who, when she would tell her stories of her rough days, I was like, oh my gosh, if you can do this, I can do this. You know, like, she was so inspiring to me, and I wanted what she had. So I trusted her implicitly. I trusted everything what she told me. And one of the first things she told me to do was to learn to meditate. And she told me to sit still for 20 minutes every morning. And I remember just looking at her like, what? Like, don't you see what this is a bigger problem than sitting still for 20 minutes. Like, what on earth is that going to even do? That doesn't even make sense. So, but I trusted her because I had no other options. I was really at a rock bottom point, and I had no other ideas, answers. I tried everything else. That's the only reason I even did this. So I said, okay, I will do this. I will sit for 20 minutes every morning. If she says it's going to work, maybe it will. And when I tried to sit for 20 minutes, I physically couldn't. You know, like, I was still detoxing from alcohol. My negative thoughts were, like, so horrific. I couldn't sit still with them, especially without being able to soothe them away by drinking. So, but I figured out that I could sit kind of still for about 3 minutes. But because she had told me 20 minutes, I did 3 minutes a few times a day so I could, you know, make up her 20-minute quota. And that's how it eventually, it took about, I think, 2 months, like 8 weeks or so, before I really had a breakthrough to validate, this is working here. So I was doing 3x3x3, you know, I was doing it 5 or 6 times a day. And, you know, maybe a few weeks into that, it just kind of got down to 3 minutes, three times a day. It just was like, I was rolling with it. I wasn't inventing this on purpose or anything. This is just how it kind of evolved. And a couple months into it is when I had my first experience in what I call, like, a higher consciousness state. I was deeply grounded, but I was so aware of how peaceful the world can be with no mind chatter. I had no words in my head for 3 whole days, and that had never happened before. I didn't even realize that was possible, to have that kind of, like, mental, inner, emotional peace, you know? And I knew from that point, because that was, people that understand my experience during those 3 days are people who have had, like, a near-death experience, because I literally felt like I was kind of outside of my body, tethered to it, but kind of outside of it. I know it sounds kind of weird, but that was how I experienced at the time. And I was still living my everyday life, but I had a perspective. It's like, I call it, like, a big me and a little me. And my conscious awareness was kind of above and behind my body. And I was watching myself going through everyday life and thinking, wow, I talk a lot. Like, you're not, you know, I'm telling jokes, I'm trying to make friends. And I'm just thinking, like, not so many words are needed. You know, like, we have so much other ways we can communicate. And I just remember looking down at my little chatty self and just thinking, it was so cute. It was almost like watching a child, like, just trying to figure it out, you know? But from that state, that was the experience that broke me open, because I was still grounded. I was still in my, you know, physical form and stuff, you know, I was still in my body. But I realized that there is a whole nother dimension or perspective or whatever you want to call it that we can access while we are here on this physical earth. And from learning that, I realized that there's no such thing as time. Like, we're always worried about time. All we ever have is the present moment. And that sounds so trite to say. All we have is the present moment. You know, like, you could say that a million times and it won't hit me until I have that experience. And it's like, you know what? That's absolutely right. I only have one moment now, and there's probably a best thing to do, person to call, food to eat. Like, there's a best thing for me to be doing in every moment to, you know, for the highest good of all involved. And that became kind of like what I just started looking at life from a broader perspective. It's like, I want to be as happy and fulfilled and uplifting to others around me as possible. And that comes from being centered and connected and present and not buried in the mind chatter, you know, in the present moment. So that's what kind of put me over that was the experience that solidified it to me that all I had to do was 3 minutes several times a day.
Okay, when you're doing that, it's a nice place to be centered. And I understand what you're saying because, you know, when a person meditates regularly, that is one of the places where it's almost like it's a refuge from the rest of the world sometimes. Mm. So, and that is the place where you got your sense of, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, which is basically now you're coaching people to do this so that they get a sense of themselves. And these people come to you with all sorts of, I guess, not problems, but challenges that they want to have, you know, better health. They want to have more money in the bank. They want to get that special relationship. And you're saying it's all underpinned by this one activity that takes 3 minutes, three times a day. Is that right? Yes or no?
Yes, that is right.
All right, you heard it here, folks. That's all you need to do, 3 minutes, three times a day. It can't be that hard. And, you know, to then say, I don't have time, my challenge to the people who are listening would be, are you sure you know what you really want in life? If this is what you want, then 3 minutes, three times a day isn't going to break the bank, is it?
That's true. That's true. And it can really switch. I mean, there's a couple reasons why 3x3 meditation is so effective. There's a gentleman I interviewed in my book, Dr. Bruce Lipton, and he, in his field, he's very well regarded and well respected. He's a cell biologist. And I started my interview with him and I just said, listen, all I do is meditate for 3 minutes, three times a day. And I've been able to drop weight. I'm, you know, like, I don't have these addiction cravings anymore. I lowered my cholesterol. Like, people treat me differently than they did. How does this happen in 3 minutes, three times a day? And I said, do you think I'm nuts? I said that right up front because half of me thought he might think I was nuts. And he laughed when I asked him that question. And he goes, I think you're doing one of the most effective things you could possibly do. Because the way he explained it to me was that we have a subconscious programming. And that's what I was talking about, like these decisions that we make when we're children, or opinions that we have about how food's going to affect our body, or how a certain person's going to react to us. We already have like a projection of what might happen, and we don't even realize it. It's totally subconscious. So we have like this subconscious tape going all the time, and we can hear it in our mind chatter and see it in predictable events and that sort of thing. Well, what he told me I was doing was constantly and consistently like cutting that subconscious tape. So more so than just a longer meditation, you know, like, because when I work with clients who already have a meditation practice in place, I don't ask them to change it. You know, 3x3 works for me, but I don't think it's like the universal, you know, there's different things for different people for sure. But I've seen that, I've seen two things. One, for people that have a hard time meditating, 3x3 is very doable and realistic for them, you know, and they can get results. And the second thing is that even if people have meditation practice where they have like 10 minutes or an hour or even more than that in the morning or in the, you know, a certain time of day that they dedicate to meditating, they can add two more 3 minutes throughout the day and get better results. To me, meditation isn't something to check off the to-do list. You know, like if I get up in the morning and it's like, okay, go to the gym, shower, eat breakfast, meditate, check, 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 check off the list. To me, meditation isn't something to check off the list. It's a state of being. It's a state of mind. And as I meditate a couple of times throughout the day, it returns me to that state of mind. And I actually start to keep that state of mind for a longer period. You know, so in the middle of my crazy, I was working at a real estate company at the time, and it was so super busy. Like half the time I would skip lunch just because I forgot about it. The phones were busy, and, you know, I would never take a break because it was so busy. When I first started this meditation practice, I would make time to go out and hide in my car or hide in the restroom or whatever. You know, I would find somewhere to go and hide and do this. And I discovered that when I did that, I would come back feeling refreshed and centered and a lot more productive and at ease than if I hadn't made time to take those 3 minutes. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I look at it as skipping a meal. Because if you're thinking, I have so much to do and I skip breakfast and I skip lunch, by the end of the day, you have no energy to do anything. It makes sense to take those breaks to nourish yourself. And that's what I'm doing when I'm doing my 3x3 practice. So if for people with longer meditation practices, and even when I do, sometimes I'll sit for, 10 minutes, not a lot. Usually I just do my three, but sometimes it's really wonderful and I sit for longer than I normally would. And I think of it as like swimming laps over the pool, like it's really soothing. You're doing something wonderful for yourself and for your body and for your mindset. And those other meditations are like just doing the deep dive, touching bottom and coming back up. You don't have to stay long at the bottom, but you do have to touch it, and then you can come back up.